Hi, Melissa.
Hello.
What episode is this?
Oh, 191, I think.
How do you like my new Rode microphone?
That's great.
After the last shit fest we had, everyone, I want to apologize to you. Sorry, talking to the mic. Melissa told me 100 times it's a directional mic. Don't turn away from the mic. You just yell at me. Just go, hey, dickhead, if I turn away from the mic.
Sure.
But last time I had this ridiculous headset. I look like a fucking Amy lady on the ad. God bless the Amy ladies. But nonetheless, the end result was Cam, who had in his little headphones, and you had nothing, or did you have headphones?
I just had the Apple headphones.
It sounded infinitely better than me with my specific headset thing, which was meant to be terrific but was a pile of shit. Anyway, here we are. Episode 191.
Yeah, we think.
Episode 191, we think. We don't want to plan too much.
Yeah,
because you'll think we're dependable. No, don't worry about it. Don't look it up. I want you to stay present. So this is the first podcast that you and I have done, Melissa Marie Cameron.
Yes.
That is just you and me, you in Upper Cumbuckta West and me over here in fucking Bayside, because normally we have a guest, so
we have done one. We did do that fitnessy one
via Zoom.
Yep, but not with a good microphone. Yeah.
All right. I stand corrected. So what I wanted to do was, I mean, there's a million options at the moment for exercise. We spoke with Leanne from Swift. How she's adapting her business. I saw today on the news, or not on the news, on some show, Chris Hemsworth is sharing with the world, you know, how to train with a bag of fruit and a fucking washing basket and three dumbbells and a fucking caftan. So he's sharing with the world, which is great of him. And, of course, Sam Wood.
Yeah, Sam.
Regular. Sam's got 28, which is killing it. We've had a lot, you know, there are lots of options, but nonetheless, I'm still asked maybe 5 questions a day around training, around equipment, around resources, around what works, what doesn't. Now I know we've had a roundabout conversation about this stuff a few times. So there might be a little bit of repetition, but there won't be too much, but I one of the things I want to do is I've always been passionate about people starting to understand how physiological adaptation works around the stimulus that we call exercise, because when people start to understand how it works, this is probably analogous to you and me and Zoom. Because you talked to me about Zoom, and a week ago my understanding was -4 and now it's 1.6 out of 10. But I'm starting to understand the technology, right?
You are doing very good.
Thank you. Hashtag patronizing. But so
no, you are.
Really? Oh, give me a little back rub. No, really? No, you're terrific. Stop it. So anyway, my long-winded point is sometimes it might seem like I overshare in terms of explaining things, but when we understand a scientific principle in layman's terms, then we know why we're doing it properly. And when we understand the mechanism behind the growth or the change or the fitness or the adaptation, then we're much more likely to, one, keep doing it, and two, take that principle and apply it to different activities or different exercises ourselves. Because when you understand, for example, here's a really easy to understand example. When you understand the notion of progressive overload, that is overloading a muscle in an intelligent way so that it adapts and becomes stronger, then it doesn't matter what the movement is, flexion, extension, whatever it is, squats, deadlifts, blah, 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 fill in the blank, you can get any movement that requires strength or muscular endurance and apply that principle to any exercise, and you're going to see some results, as long as you're paying attention to your body. Which brings me to you. So you know what I've been doing. I've been bunkering down. I've been doing stuff. I've been doing circuits at home. I'm going to go through some stuff that I'm doing. And everything I'm sharing today is not, again, not a program, not a prescription, just thoughts and ideas. And I will say that quite a few things I'm sharing are not specific to exercise, but just generally to helping us stay in shape or lose a few pounds or keep our metabolism fired up or all in that space of health and wellness. But what's your, how have you adapted? Because probably a lot of people don't know that you're like me and that you train most days of your life.
Yeah, so I've actually been enjoying it because it's been something different. So I've been using an old weight vest, been using that to go walking in and just increasing the weight gradually. I haven't used that in a very long time. So that's been good.
That? Oh, yeah. How much weight?
It's like your one.
But cheaper.
Yeah, like your one, but cheaper.
How much weight do you carry when you go for a...
It's just got, I think we worked it out the other day, it's just got 30 pounds in it.
Okay.
So that's some on the back, some on the front, some on the back for people that aren't familiar with weight vests.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, yeah, nicely distributed.
Yeah.
And like that in itself, I just find helps to increase the difficulty. And so I've just been using that, getting comfortable with that again. And doing some interval-based stuff as well. So a bit of, you know, jog for some of it,
yeah.
Walk for the next bit, jog for the next bit, walk for the next bit. Kind of interval-based, turning it up if I can to a bit more of like a faster run.
Yeah.
Just trying to really see how my body's responding to that style of training, but I really like that.
What about strength training? Because yep. I know you lift weight. How often do you typically, don't fib.
Yep.
How often do you really lift weights normally when the world's not shut down?
The world's not. Probably three times a week.
Okay. And are you just, have you dropped that altogether or are you doing?
Yeah, because I obviously don't have access to the gym equipment that I would normally at the gym, but I've been doing other body weight stuff at home. I feel like I have dropped strength a bit. Like I felt like I was getting somewhere prior to this, starting to improve a bit. But that's okay. It comes with the territory. Trying to do what I can to, I guess, maintain as much as what I can and even improve whilst we're in isolation. Mm. So I've recently pulled out some old, I used to teach some Les Mills classes. So I've recently pulled out like an old body balance tracks and stuff like that. So I've been doing stuff that I wouldn't have done in maybe 6 or 7 years. And
sore.
I have been sore, which is great because it's something that my body used to get way back then was so familiar with that I didn't feel it as much. But now it's doing exercises that I haven't done in years. So I'm feeling that now, even things like planks, side planks, ab stuff, wall squats, those sorts of things. Just trying to mix it up a bit. And yeah, that's been.
Well, the beauty of it is, that when we do different things that even if we train all the time, there's a thing called conditioning specificity. And what it means is that we essentially become fit for, in inverted commas, we become fit for the thing that we do.
Yep.
Which is why for example, my weight training fitness is probably a 9.
Yep.
My running from my joint to the beach and back fitness is probably a 4. My going and doing a fucking bendy Wendy yoga class is a -1, right? My, let's say, agility is probably a 3. You know, my muscular endurance is probably a 7. My aerobic endurance is probably a 4. You know, so there are all these elements, what we call, when people talk about how fit is somebody? Quite often they're talking about aerobic capacity.
Yes.
But you got to remember, like even somebody, let's say a person who works for the council, let's just, and they dig holes all day. I don't know if anyone actually does that anymore. But that dude or that girl who digs holes all day, let's say for their 8-hour day, they're actually digging 4 hours. Now, that is an incredible kind of fitness. That is muscular endurance. You know, that is aerobic endurance. There's a lot of muscles. There's a lot of core muscles being used on lower back and glutes. And, you know, so even though we wouldn't call that training, that is actually, you've got to remember that training is just a term that we use for movement. So whether or not it's the bloke or the girl who's shoveling dirt 4 hours a day, or whether or not it's the show pony that goes to the gym with his fucking bum bag. Hang on, am I talking about myself? Hang on. goes, you know, and he does his weights or whatever it is. All it is moving our body, and our body will respond. So we can become very fit for something while being pretty hopeless at something else. So me being, you know, even me, for example, going, oh, I've been running 3 days a week and I'm doing, I haven't been, but let's say 5Ks a time, which is, you know, not amazing, not good, not bad. So I'm running 15Ks, da-da-da-da-da. Then all of a sudden, after not being in water for 10 years, I go for a swim and I'm fucked in one lap.
Yep.
Right? Because yep. I've done no swimming. Obviously, I'm going to go better with a running base than no base, but still. So we find that even the other way with some swimmers can swim. I remember I told this story once before, but God bless her little socks, when I started training Tammy Van Wisser,
yeah,
who was one of the best marathon swimmers on the planet. And the first day that I trained Tam, and we were just going to do all non-swimming stuff, which we did for quite a long time. Yeah. Day one, because it was a beautiful day, I said, we're going to go and do a 1K jog warm-up. And it's not like I was a fucking gazelle. I ran with her. And we went for a run. And the world champion bloody ultra-marathon swimmer nearly died running 1K because she didn't do anything that was weight-bearing. She certainly didn't go running, and obviously she adapted and improved very quickly. But the bottom line is we are in this space now where we're doing different things because we have to. And one of the crazy things that I'm hearing is that people are really doing these adapted, adjusted, modified, improvised workouts and getting really sore.
Yes.
And getting, not that we need to be sore, but getting really good results because they're doing old things in new ways.
Yes.
So I've got some suggestions for you that I want to go through. So number one is do old things in new ways. What's something that you do consistently that you can do it in a different way? I remember often, okay, in fact, I'll give you a very specific story. So I used to have two trainers that worked for me, Tara and Kathy. And Tara Jarrett, who lives in Kyabram, she is mum of my godson, Mitch. And they were both trainers and they came to me one day. They're both strong, they're both fit, they're both very conditioned, they're both in very good shape. And it was leg day. And one of the things about trainers is when you are a trainer, sometimes you get sick of thinking about your own workouts.
Yep.
So often my trainers would come to me and go, can you write me a program so I don't have to think about it? Mm. Or could you give me some ideas? Or I go, yeah, sure. So the girls came up to me and said, can you write us a leg workout? And I said, sure. And they'd finished work for, I think it was like lunchtime, you know, it's maybe midday, and they didn't have to work again till 4 or 5. So they had 4 or 5 hours off, training, lunch, downtime. I said, sure. And so I went up to the whiteboard and I wrote leg press, 45 degree leg press, 100 pounds, so 50 pounds each side, 2000 reps. That was the whole workout, right? So they each had to do 20 sets of 100 reps.
Yep.
So once they started that 100 reps, they couldn't get out of the leg press till they'd finished the 100. So they could have a pause at the top or the bottom,
yep,
but they couldn't rack the weight to take the pressure off their legs.
Makes sense.
Right? And they're like, oh, wow, that looks sucky, but yeah, okay. I'm like, not exciting, not boring, but incredibly different, and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Both of them cried. Maybe they didn't. I think one of them did. But anyway, the bottom line is it took them, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours. And I'm not recommending, if you're not a trained athlete or if you're not, you don't have, I'm not suggesting anyone does this, but both of these girls were late 20s and very fit. They both did it. Neither of them got injured, of course, but they were both sore for days. And they reckon that was the best, Tara still talks to me, the best workout, single leg workout she ever did in her life.
Really?
The best leg workout she ever did in her life. Now, I'm not suggesting we do that. What I'm suggesting is sometimes we get into a real pattern with exercise.
Yep.
So what I'm saying is change it up. Whatever you normally do, you know, if you do squats, cool, find a different way to do squats. Mm. If you normally do whatever, X weight with, you know, four sets of 15, why don't you do one set of 100 with no weight or hardly any weight? Or why don't you do three sets of 50? Or just do something where you're stimulating, you're using familiar movement patterns and familiar exercises, but you're introducing something completely new. We're not talking about being silly or risk. We're just talking about doing old things in new ways and seeing how your body responds. So there's this idea that I've spoken about once before, and I'll just touch on it again. And that is, I want you to think about, so we have this, there's this concept called performance threshold. I've spoken about it. And that is what we can actually physically do. Now, I'm not saying or recommending that we should test our outer limits of physical performance or capacity on a regular basis. But what I'm saying is sometimes we get really into a groundhog day-ness of movement and exercise and pattern and familiarity where we are essentially doing the same thing the same way, same movement sets, reps, volume, intensity, recovery forever, and then crazily expecting our body to be quite different.
Mm.
When what we're really doing is training it to maintain.
Yep.
Because everything we're doing is a version of maintenance. Mm. So David Goggins, who some of you will know about, he talks about this. I've been talking about it for a long time. He talks about it a lot more bluntly than me. But it is essentially the fact that we can work harder. I'm talking about working intelligently and safely, but harder. Most of us can work much harder and smarter than we are. Now, that doesn't mean more volume. That doesn't mean necessarily more volume. It doesn't mean we don't have days off. It doesn't mean we don't have recovery days. But the amount of times where I've seen people in the gym who I know the story they're telling themselves is, I am right now working at 9 out of 10. And I know because I understand potential and physiology, and I've watched tens of thousands of bodies doing this, I know they're working at a 4 or a 5. And so, but the truth is, we just don't want to get that uncomfortable. So the second idea is to think about being very present when you're doing something, and whether or not you actually need to finish the set when you want to finish the set.
Mm.
Whether or not you need to slow down when you want to slow down. Again, exercise caution, be intelligent, don't overdo it, have a good, yes, we understand all of that. But once you're at a point where now you've been training for a while, you've got a strength base, you've got an aerobic base, you've got a flexibility base, you've been working out. Now, if your body's not changing, then either you're following the wrong program or you're not doing the right program the right way. Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. And obviously that's provided that your diet's on track.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I want to backtrack a little bit. Now, I did a picture the other day of my weight vest that I've also dragged out of retirement. So
how good are they?
Yeah, they're good. They're good. So I just wanted to give you a quick example of a couple of thoughts around this. Now, obviously, not everybody's got a weight vest. And I don't think everybody should have a weight vest. What I'm going to do is just share some random thoughts and ideas and suggestions. I'm going to suggest maybe 10 or 12 things over the course of this conversation. And it might be just one or two. They'll all be interesting, but it might be one or two that you go, hey, I'm going to give that a go. So this might be something you might give a go. So weight vests start at about $80 and go up to about $400 or $500 and range in, you know, quality from kind of crap to almost indestructible. So I've got a couple of almost indestructibles. And so what happens is, apart from any, all of the other options that we have with a weight vest, just by putting more weight on our body, so some precautions, start light, one. Two, keep good posture. When you're wearing a weight vest, now I'm saying this to you, Melissa, too, because you're starting to wear your vest, make sure that you walk very consciously with your posture in mind, very aware of your posture as you go. Because if you have thoracic spinal, like sore between the shoulder blades, sore neck, this can exacerbate it, but not if you walk the right way with the right posture.
Sure.
So just before we jumped on, I did some little analysis on. I compared a 60 kilogram woman. I just picked a random. So I went a lady who's 40. She's about 5'6" tall. She weighs 60 kilos. Now that lady is going to expend about, now remember when you're looking at charts and graphs, as Melissa and I have spoken many times on the internet, that you can look up the same thing on five different charts, you'll get five different ranges, if not so often nowhere near each other. So this is a little bit of bro science, but it's pretty close based on my understanding and my experience. So, bottom line is, a lady who weighs about 60 kilos and wears a 20 kilo vest, which by the way is pretty heavy, but she's going to expend somewhere between 30 and 50% more energy doing the exact same walk. So the walk was a 4K walk for 40 minutes. So that means she is walking at an average speed of 6 kilometers per hour. So I based it on 40 minutes, 4Ks, and with a 20 kilo load, which is for somebody who's not trained, way too heavy. Somebody who's trained, it's maybe appropriate, but even at 60 kilos, it's still a third of your body weight, so it's a lot. If you are starting out with this and you're using either an actual weight vest or like a backpack or something, which you can, most of us have got simple backpacks around the house that we can put some soup cans in or something, then bottom line in is doing the same thing the same way at the same speed, it's going to increase energy expenditure. And if calories burned interest you, then that's not a bad thing. The other thing with a weight vest, obviously, is that if, for example, you're doing, let's say you weigh 60 kilos, like our lady. Actually, let's do me. So I weighed myself this morning, which I rarely do, but I weighed 85.4. So let's go 85 kilos. Now let's say I'm wearing a 20 kilo pack. Now let's say I'm wearing 30 kilos. So I put on a 30 kilo pack, the weight's distributed front and back evenly. So as comfortable as 30 kilos can be, it is. So now I decide I'm going to do some squats, some freestanding body weight squats, but now I'm wearing a vest. So instead of me doing 50 squats with 85 kilos, I'm now doing 50 squats with 115 kilos, 30 plus body weight. So instead of that going from, for me to do 50 just body weight squats, reasonably low, it's kind of like a 3 out of 10. But for me to do 50 body weight plus 30 kilograms in a vest squat, exact same movement, exact same technique. I can do it in the lounge room. I can do it in my front yard. I can do it in the garage. I can do it in my office. Exact same movement. That would go from a 3 or 4 out of 10 in terms of intensity for me all the way up to an 8 or 9. I might not even get 50 if I'm being honest and I'm using very good form. And not only does now I've got a real training effect without using, in inverted commas, gym equipment. I'm not in a leg press. I'm not in a hack squat. I'm not using a barbell. I'm not using kettlebells. I'm not using dumbbells. I'm wearing a vest. But what I'm doing now is I'm actually doing a kind of resistance training with very minimal equipment. And so if you want to scale that back to you, if you're somewhere in the ballpark of beginner, then you can do the exact same thing. If you're a complete beginner, I would start with doing body weight squats. Don't even worry about the weight, the extra weight, and then over time bring that up. So then we take that where we go, all right, well, I can, yes, Melissa?
Can you just stop moving your hands in front of the mic if possible? We're just getting a few noises.
Sorry.
Thank you. Sorry, keep going.
Was it going?
We're just getting a few noises.
Really? Like what kind of noises?
Just like you're shuffling at your end.
Sorry, everyone. I'm part Italian. I'm going to have to sit on my hands. So the other thing that we can do also when we're wearing weight, whether or not that's a proper weight vest, a crappy weight vest, or a backpack, is that we can do a body weight workout. So it's body weight plus. So then all of a sudden, you know, push-ups become something very different. Squats, dips, chin-ups, plyometrics, stair walking, all of those things become very different. So it's not a cardio workout or a muscular endurance workout anymore necessarily. Quite often it becomes, what am I doing?
You're moving that hand right in front of the microphone.
Does it make that much difference?
And you can hear it, yes.
That's a super sensitive microphone.
Sorry, keep
going. So bottom line is it becomes a strength. I don't know what to do with my hands. All right.
Keep going.
So bottom line, weight vests, not a bad idea. I wouldn't use one all the time. I dragged mine out. I've used mine. What's today? What is today?
Sunday.
I think I've used it, three times this week. One was just a walk. One was a circuit session, and one was a step-up session I did outside, which was horrible. So here's another idea that is just in terms of, remember the title of this is Weird Workouts in Weird Times. So then these are not all workout things. These are just ideas. So one of the things that many people want to do, obviously, is drop a few pounds or drop a few kilos, drop some body fat, change their body composition, get leaner. And I'm very, very aware that around this goal, there is a lot of neuroses and overthinking and obsession and compulsive destructive behaviors and insecurity. And so I'm always careful when I open the door on this, how do I get leaner conversation? Also, you know, for me too, this has been an area for me where, and I've been very open about this, I've, my whole life, even until really now, I'm probably somewhere up towards the sane end of the scale, but you know, I can still overthink body fat and all of those things. And that's just me being real and raw and honest. So, but I wanted to give you a really simple idea that I did. I've done this quite a few times, maybe a little group kind of program that I did on, I did it many times on SEN, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 times on SEN, where we had a 30-day kind of program that people just, SEN is a radio station here in Melbourne, where people just jumped on board. And that was the simplest concept in the world. You have to do no extra training. You require no equipment at all. You don't need to learn anything. You don't need to be smart. You don't need any particular skills. And that is to cut out all liquid calories out of your diet for 30 days. So it's very hard to find data on what the average Australian has per day in terms of calorie intake through coffee, tea, juices, soft drinks, alcohol, smoothies, milk on cereal. But my kind of bro science research is that for many people, it's about 800 calories a day.
Wow.
About 800. And that's not, you know, that's a few cappuccinos and a smoothie. Depends on which, I mean, there are smoothies that you can buy from well-known places. I won't mention names, but it rhymes with juiced boosters. Some of those fuckers are 500-600 calories with an extraordinary amount of sugar, right? But people go in thinking they're getting, look, there are also some good ones in that particular place, but we just need to be careful. Bottom line is, it's easy to have 800 calories a day via liquid. So let's say we keep our food the same over the 30 days, and we can do this forever, of course, but I'm just using 30 days as an idea. So 30 days gives us 24,000 calories less than the 30 days before.
Mm.
Now, so, and again, this is just something, look, if you, all of the other things that I'm going to share with you, I'm looking, okay, not all of them, but most of them require some exertion and effort, but this doesn't. This requires restraint. Yeah. This requires you actually doing less. But it's funny that we can do less and make massive gains. So all things being equal, and that's a funny thing to say, but if for example, Melissa, let's say you have, I'm just going to pluck a number. Let's say your daily requirements, and it doesn't work like this because our daily requirements for energy vary. But let's just say on average, your daily requirements to break even, not gain weight, not lose weight, not lose body fat, not increase body fat. Let's say your number is 2,000 calories a day.
Yep.
Right? Now, if you have 500 calories a day less than your maintenance number,
yes,
you will drop 1 pound of fat per week, subcutaneous, little bit of visceral, but you will drop about a pound. That is, 1 pound consists of about 3,500 calories. So 7 times 500, that's what it takes in inverted commas to make a pound of fat.
Yep.
To make in inverted commas a kilo of fat is about 7,700. So if now what we do is, and we're like the typical person, look, even if your number is 500 calories a day, but if my number is 800 and now I'm having 800 calories less per day, that's going to equate to just under 7 pounds or about 3 and a bit kilos of fat loss over the course of 30 days without increasing exercise, without burning more calories, without training harder, without tweaking any other variables. Now, again, there are lots of variables that come to play here, but the bottom line is there's not one person that has actually done this in all the time I've known it, where the only thing they have for 30 days, the only thing they have is black coffee, black tea, herbal teas, water, mineral water, no calorie drinks, where they actually do it and they don't lose weight. Every single person that I have observed or been in contact with that's done this has lost weight, and more specifically fat. So that's just another idea. What do you think of that?
I think that's a great idea, particularly for people that consume a lot of liquid calories. That could be a simple change that makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, here's my next idea. Completely ridiculous. Train 10 times a day. That's it.
I have a feeling I can see where you're going with this one.
Okay, so there's a guy who used to work for me. He did his PhD in exercise physiology. His name's now Dr. Chris Lorenzen. If anyone knows Chris, shout out to Chris. And his research was around, I've mentioned this once before, but revision doesn't hurt. I can't remember the exact nuts and bolts, but his research was comparing small installments of exercise through the day compared to one big workout or one normal workout for the same amount of time. So the collective minutes in the small workouts would equal the one big workout.
Mm.
So what he found was not only were the small workouts just as effective, they were quite often more effective than the one workout from a metabolic point of view. So what happens is if you're exercising and you can manage to turn up the intensity for 3 minutes, then there's a metabolic shift. So what will happen is the rate at which your body burns calories, in inverted commas, or use or expends energy at rest. So you've been sitting at your computer for an hour, you go out and do 3 minutes of stairs like a crazy person. You come back and sit at your desk. You're now sitting at your desk just like you were 5 minutes ago, but your body's using more fuel. Again, I'm keeping this very lay and I'm keeping the science very simple, but this is what happens. And then you do that 10 times a day. I'm not suggesting anyone has to. This is just another idea. What happens is you're also regulating your blood sugar more evenly quite often, and you're kicking your metabolism in the gut, so to speak. So, for example, I've done this many times where I would do 10 workouts a day. They would be 3 minutes in duration, so for a total workout time of 30 minutes per day. And every workout would be different. You could make every workout the same. It doesn't matter. But so I wrote down some examples. So workout one could be stairs or step-ups. Workout two could be squats. So if you can't do 3 minutes of squats, just up and down body weight, do as many as you can, take a little breather, the minimum time you can take, and then keep going till you get to your 3 minutes. 3 minute jog, run, or power walk. I literally used to do this, and you know this, Melissa. On my office where I'm sitting now is 20 feet from my side gate. I would run out the side gate like a maniac. I would run around the block, which is about 800 meters. I would be back in about 3 minutes. I would run up the stairs and sit back down. So that's number three. Number four, sit-ups or some kind of abdominal movement. Number five, a prone hold, so it's not going to wear you out cardiovascularly. Number six, push-ups. Number seven, dips. Number eight, some kind of, if you've got any kind of bike or rower or stepper or something like that at home, use that. If you don't, just repeat one of the others. Number nine is hand stepping, which is, I've explained this once before, but hand stepping is, let's say you're at the bottom of some stairs or a step outside your front door and you're in a push-up position. Even if you're not super strong, you can still get in a push-up position without doing the push-up. And one hand up onto the step, then other hand up onto the step, then one hand down, other hand down. So it's like we're doing a step up with our hands. So we call that hand stepping. And again, if you can't do 3 minutes, do what you can, rest, and then jump back into it straight away. And then number 10 is something a bit harder, which is burpees or star jumps. Star jumps much easier, of course, than burpees, and or switch jumps. Switch jumps are where you would say have your hands on your hips. You had 1 foot forward, 1 foot back, right forward, foot right forward, other foot right back, jump up, swap places with your feet. So 1 foot goes back, one goes forward, and then just keep going. So you're just switching front, back. Again, 3 minutes of that is hard. You might want to do some 30-second or one-minute installments. But again, not conventional, not fun, not comfy, not easy, but really effective. And this is the thing. We don't need $1 million worth of equipment. We're just used to it. You know, the bottom line is our body needs movement. I did some maths. I'm trying to find it. I did this exact concept, but I did 3 minutes of stair walking on the hour while I was working, studying. I completed on average about 15 flights. So 15 flights in 3 minutes over 10 sets is 150 flights. 30 minutes of brisk stair walking at my weight, 85 kilos, is about 400 calories worth of effort. So I'm also boosting my metabolism 10 times a day. So without really going for a workout per se, I did 10 times 3 minutes of stairs, quite brisk. And in between sitting at my computer and working and studying, I did a 400 calorie workout.
Cool.
And I also did some strength that day too. What are your thoughts, Melissa?
I think that's great. I think they're little things that we can just try and just implement in our day, and we may not even realize that that's what we're doing, kind of thing.
Because it's Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, because it's not a solid chunk of time. It's just things that we do throughout there.
We have to think too outside the box right now, because we've been very programmed to think that, you know, like I'll give you another one. This is so fun. I was talking to a dude I know. He's a CrossFitter.
Mm-hmm.
And his partner is a CrossFitter. So she's into it. He's into it. They're gangsters. They live on a property. So they've got a driveway that is about 100 meters long.
Yeah.
So guess what they do? So the driveway, he told me, there's a very slight slope or a very slight gradient.
Yeah.
They start at the front gate. She sits in and drives with the engine off. He pushes her up. Right? Slight uphill gradient. She pushes him back and they do sets of 20. So he's doing 2Ks, she's doing 2Ks. You think about, that's just like pushing a sled in a gym.
Yeah.
Except you're pushing 2,000 pounds of metal.
Just a slight difference.
You're pushing, I don't know, 2,000 kilos probably of metal that rolls on wheels. And he said it's unbelievable. They've been doing it for a week. And everything, his ass, his quads, his legs, his, because you're using your upper body. You know, so I just thought that was brilliant, you know.
Hilarious.
So when she, the funny thing is, though, I said, how do you turn it around, right? And he goes, we don't. She pushes me and I drive backwards. So she's got to push him. She pushes from the bonnet. He pushes from the boot. But they do sets of 20. I'm like, that is crazy. How long does that take? He goes, a fucking long time. So, again, what's that? That's being creative. You're using your, it's a whole body movement. It's not traditional. It's not familiar. Some people would go that silly. We don't all have a 100-meter drive. I get it. But what it is people being creative and thinking outside the box, you know? If anyone wants to come and push me up and down my driveway, feel free. If anyone wants to push me to the supermarket and push me home, just email Melissa. I wanted to talk about something that I've mentioned a few times, but I actually crunched some numbers and I think this is really interesting. So because I live near the beach and because my first gym was 100 meters from the beach. And back in, am I doing the thing with my hands or have I?
No, keep going. You're being very good.
Thank you. I'm a bit scared because you're very intimidating. But I spent years, back before boot camps were a thing, I used to run programs called Commando Program. And I used to do most of my training at the beach. So Bayside, lots of beach, lots of tracks. So back before, I mean, I was doing this in the mid-80s, 86, 87, 88, and in the 90s. So over 30 years ago. And I would train people in soft sand for an hour. And there are hard workouts, but there's probably very, very, very few harder workouts than training at a high intensity in soft sand.
Mm.
So, again, we're talking about doing old things in new ways. So I just want to talk, you can do lots of things in sand, of course, but I'm just going to talk about, I actually found this yesterday, which I found fascinating. So there was a study published through the Journal of Experimental Biology. And they were talking about, okay, if, for example, let's just use me. I do a set walk every day. Let's say I walk around suburbia. I walk for 5 kilometers. It takes me 1 hour. So my distance is 5 kilometers. My time is 1 hour. My walking speed is obviously 5 kilometers per hour. Now, if I was to do that same activity, walking at 5 kilometers per hour, and I take that off a solid surface and I move myself to the sand, and again, there are variables with this, but even hard sand is nothing like walking on grass or walking on concrete. Walking on sand requires 2.1 to 2.7 times more energy. So think about this. If I normally expended, so based on, say, let's say someone typically expends 350 calories on their walk, which a lot of people would be in that ballpark. So their typical calorie, and I'm not talking every day, but typical over time, average over time calorie expenditure is 350 calories. Now we take that off the footpath or off the grass, and we put that same person doing the same walk for the same amount of time at the same speed on sand. And we go somewhere in the middle and say 2.5 times energy expenditure. Now that person is not expending 350 calories. They're expending 875.
Wow.
Now that is fucking unbelievable. Mm. So just one simple, and yes, I know it's hard. And I know we don't all have access to sand. And I know, yes, right now, we're in a difficult time with some beaches closed down. I get all of that. So we maybe put that to the side for one moment, but just in general terms, for when we're not locked down, or for those of us who can walk at the beach that's near us, then soft sand walking is an absolute energy killer.
Mm.
Obviously, a bit tougher, a lot tougher. It's unstable. If you've got pre-existing conditions with shitty knees or shitty ankles, maybe get clearance first. If you don't have access to sand, then you'll get a very similar result walking uphill. Obviously downhill, not so much, but definitely the uphill bit, very intense, and it's going to increase your energy expenditure through the roof. What time are we at, Melissa?
We're about just short of 50 minutes in.
Okay. So maybe I'll just share one or two more quirky things just to think about.
Sure.
So I'm going to read something, which I don't normally do, but it's just worth reading because I really loved, this was an article written by James Hamlin, who's a medical doctor. He's a writer for a newspaper in the States called The Atlantic. He also lectures at Yale, he's an author, he's quite accomplished, but he just wrote this really good article. And I've always been fascinated with, we've seen a lot lately with Wim Hof and a lot of other people talking about the benefits of cold. And it's generally they're talking about from a health point of view, an anti-inflammatory point of view, an immune system point of view, but there's another benefit, and that is that being cold increases metabolic rate through the roof and increases energy expenditure through the roof.
Mm.
So he wrote an article. I'm just going to read some of it. It's called How Does Being Cold Burn Calories? If you're a human in winter today, take solace, we're heading into winter in Australia anyway, in the knowledge that being outside burns calories, just being outside. In the journal Trends in Endocrinology and Metabolism, scientists from Maastricht University in the Netherlands suggest that when exercise isn't an option, regular exposure to mild cold can provide a healthy and sustainable alternative strategy for increasing energy expenditure. So just being outside, they're saying. Mm. Not running, not jogging, not training, yeah. Just being outside. Shivering can increase your metabolic rate as much as fivefold. Five. Fuckity fuck. Get in the fridge, bro. The problem with shivering is that it sucks. So, well, he writes it's terrible. So Dr. blah, blah, blah and colleagues looked at being only mildly cold as a way to burn calories. Our bodies burn energy to keep us warm in a process called non-shivering thermogenesis, NST. They explain, which works at even pretty reasonable temperatures. So their definition of reasonable temperatures is 64 degrees Fahrenheit, which is actually just below 18 degrees Celsius. which is to me not even cold. But I'd be, but okay, so just to put this in context, last night I looked at my phone and it was 8 in Hampton.
Yeah.
And it was about 10. And I'm a bit crazy. So I went, I'm going out.
Of course.
And I walked 3Ks last night in bare feet and a singlet and my shorts. And it was 8. Right? I'm like, my metabolism's going to be fucking jacked. But honestly, so you're cold. So 3Ks took me about, I don't know, 30 minutes walking.
Yeah.
But it's cold. So you're cold. You're not dying. You're not in pain. The coldest part of my body was my feet. But I got home and I walked into...
No, you don't say.
I walked into my house, which was not heated, just in... And it felt so warm.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And I could feel, like, I know my body very well. And I know that it increased my metabolism. I know. And I'm not suggesting we all do this, but it's something I've actually done that on and off for years. I walk bare feet a lot. Melissa knows that. And some of my listeners know that. I walk bare feet a lot. I'm in bare feet right now. I don't wear shoes 90% of my life. And I love being outside in bare feet. So back to the article, in most young and middle-aged people, NST, which is non-shearing thermogenesis, increases by a few percent and 30% in response to mild cold exposure. They can significantly improve your calorie in to calorie burned ratio. They say it can. Even if you eat more to compensate, most people won't eat enough to undo the extra energy expenditure. When exposure to cold... When exposed to cold, non-shivering thermogenesis, NST, and eventually shivering thermogenesis add on to a typical basal metabolic rate, BMR, to increase your overall metabolic rate. Indoor temp, listen, this is really interesting. Indoor temperatures in most buildings is regulated to minimize the percentage of people being dissatisfied. They note, apparently in a reference to some ideal world that is not our office, by lack of exposure to a varied ambient temperature, whole populations may be prone to develop diseases like obesity and all the correlated diseases to that. In addition, people become vulnerable to sudden changes in ambient temperature because we've created this constant for ourselves where we are always warm. Warm in the car, warm at home, warm at work, or, you know, the right temperature for us. So what they are suggesting is, and they're not talking about living in it, but they're talking about exposing ourselves to different, just like when we talk about, we've spoken about saunas and heat shock proteins. Am I doing the hand thing again?
No, you're good.
Okay. Yeah, so varied temperature is good. The idea is like a paleo diet for your surroundings. Our bodies aren't meant to always be in ideally temperate environments. Letting the temperature of your home or office vary significantly with the seasons is good for your immune system, good for you, and good for the environment. Cold factor, cold exposure alone will not save the world, but it is a serious factor to consider in creating a sustainable environment together with a healthy lifestyle. In the journal Cell Metabolism, they share that researchers from the National Institutes of Health say the effects of shivering and exercise are very similar, that is amazing, and the endocrine changes, that's hormones, in our bodies in response to cold are exploitable in obesity therapeutics development. Being cold activates brown fat, they observed, which burns calories rapidly to generate heat. Dr. Francesco Chili, a professor at the Virginia Commonwealth University who oversaw the experiments, told the New York Times, if you can't get to the gym, consider lingering outside at a bus stop, which I thought was funny. So, you know, that just means that the 6 a.m. outdoor workout you do in 10 degrees. Yeah. So let's say you train at 6 a.m. outside and it's 10 degrees versus doing the exact same workout later in the day when it's 22 degrees or 20 degrees. Even if you do the identical workout on the same landscape and the same equipment, for the same duration, doing it in a colder temperature will force greater adaptation and burn significantly more calories for the same, in inverted commas, effort. Oh, shit, I find that stuff interesting. How interesting is that?
Yeah, very.
I just want to add maybe one more just vignette. It's not an exercise thing. It's okay. So when we went into lockdown, you know how this is going to sound a little bit obsessive, but you know how we all know our own body pretty well. Some of us don't as well as we should, but you know, when you know, okay, so I know, for example, when I'm 90 kilos, I'm a little bit fat. I'm not obese, but I'm a bit fat for me. When I'm 82 kilos, I look like my head's caving in. Right? I look like I need a fucking feed, right? I look like an ultra endurance athlete that shouldn't be an ultra endurance athlete. So I was nudging towards 90 a few weeks ago and not overeating, but probably just under moving because of my new study regime. So when we started to go into lockdown, I went, fuckity fuck, Batman, I'm going to get fat as fuck if I don't have a plan, because I can eat all the food when no one's watching. I'll be just like, I'll emerge from the bunker in fucking July looking like fucking Humphrey B. Bear with fucking army shorts on. I'm like, I need to be careful because I could fucking roll out of here and Greenpeace will drag me back to the ocean, just fucking push me on my way. So what I did was I decided I was going to eat my normal breakfast and my normal dinner. Breakfast I've shared 1,000 times, which is oats and almond milk and psyllium husk and protein powder. That's my typical breakfast. When I put it all together, it weighs about 130 grams, and then I chuck almond milk on top of that. And then my typical dinner is a protein source and veggies and perhaps some basmati rice, protein being chicken or fish or turkey or beef or eggs. But through the day, I often feel like I don't know about you guys listening, but I don't get as hungry through the day. Mm. Nonetheless, I eat lunch because it's lunchtime. I don't eat a big lunch, but I eat lunch. And one thing that I've found, I've been telling you this, Melissa, for a year, and I'm a bit slow, so it takes me a while to click. But often, when the world's not in, you know, an apocalyptic state and I'm training as normal, I often train with a crab at about 4 o'clock. And probably 5 or 6 days a week, at about 3 or 4 o'clock, I just experienced this tiredness, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll come back to that in a moment. So what I decided to do was I'm going to eat way less for lunch. And if I could get away with it, now I'm not suggesting you do this. This is me, trial and error, 56-year-old body, endomorph, looks at food, gets fat, just me. So I thought I'm going to eat a very much smaller lunch with no starch and no carbs, because that has a bit of an effect on me, and or none. So for the last 21 days or so, before we got on this call, I was hungry and I ate 30 almonds, which is give or take 120 calories. I had my breakfast. I had 30 almonds. I won't eat anything else till dinner. Yesterday, I had breakfast, nothing all day, and then dinner. The day before, I think I had a protein drink midday made with water. So I've cut starch out through the day. Now, this is just me, and I'm coming to a long-winded point. So what's happened is I weighed myself this morning. I think I said earlier, I weighed 85.4. I've lost, as far as I can tell, no muscle. I've lost about 3.5 kilos of what seems to be fat for me. I probably don't need to lose a whole lot more. I think 84 or 85 is a good space for me to be strong enough, lean enough, healthy enough, functional enough. But apart from, and really I just changed one thing, like just one thing. Everything else remained the same. Obviously I'm not training the way I would like to, but what I've done, because my challenge has always been food, is I've just gone, right, this is my new operating system with food for now. I'll see what happens. But based on what's happening, I'm pretty sure this is going to be my new protocol forever. because as we age, things change. Metabolism changes. As we change our lifestyle, I'm sitting at a computer a lot more. I wish I didn't have to, but it's hard to do a PhD while you're jogging around. Although I do have a stand-up workstation as well, so I'm doing that when I can. But the surprise out of all of this for me, and this is the most important thing for me, is that all of the tiredness, all of it has gone. Like nearly every day, I would feel like falling asleep around 3 or 4 o'clock. I would be so tired. And there were times when I would literally go lie down and sleep for 45 minutes. Nothing has changed except taking that meal out through the middle of the day. My cognitive function is better. My memory is better. My mental acuity, my mental energy, my physical energy, my attention span, my productivity, my efficiency. Like we're doing this right now. We're recording this at 3:20. My brain's fucking electric right now.
Which normally is actually 4:20.
Oh yeah, 4:20. Normally at this time of the day, I'm sliding into a coma and trying to keep myself alive with caffeine. And it's just for me, okay, so that's what I did. I'm not saying you should do that. What I'm saying is stop following a protocol that doesn't work if you are doing that. If your goal is to change, but you are consistently not changing, experiment. I'm not talking about experimenting with drugs. I'm talking about experimenting with the way that you manage your body in terms of the things that you day to day make decisions about. What you eat, when you eat, how you eat. How you move your body, when you move your body, how hard, how long, all of those things. How you sleep, when you sleep, the way that your room is when you go to sleep, how you hydrate your body. What you do with alcohol or don't do with alcohol. Like there are just so many things that we can, you know, it's like the no liquid calories. If you want an idea, do that. Will it be comfortable, quick, easy, and painless? No. How much do you want to change your body? If your mindset is, I'll give it a go, don't start. That is my advice. Because my experience is that far too many people in this space are kind of going to do it one day and then they wake up and it's 5 years down the track and they're still having the same inner dialogue about the same issues that we're really not addressing. So we don't need to be killers. We don't need to be over the top. We don't need to be obsessive. But we're either going to do the thing or we're not going to do the thing. So what I can tell you about stepping into this space of creating some kind of shift is if you do one thing and then build on that one thing, you are much more likely to create lasting change. I've got a few more ideas, but I think I'll leave it there. Feel free, once you've heard this, to come back to either Facebook or Instagram and find the post that I put up about this podcast and share your ideas. This is a community. We're all in it together. We're all trying to figure it out. I would love to hear from you how you've adapted. Like, have you had any light bulbs like me? Has something worked for you that's so simple but powerful? And then we can start to perhaps, you know, pay attention to what each other's doing, learn from each other, and over time figure out our own personal blueprint that's optimal for us. And Melissa?
Sounds good.
What would you like to share with the masses?
I was just going to remind people that the online mentoring program is still open for registrations. So that kicks off next Monday, so not tomorrow, the following Monday, the 13th, which is Easter Monday. Kicks off 8 p.m. that night. So if you're wanting to be involved, it's 4 weeks, 8 sessions, and all the details are on the website, craigharber.net/shop. If you just click on the one that says online mentoring, you'll get some more details.
Oh, good for you. good for you. That means please come and do it because I've got to pay for Mum's hip operation. And
don't say that.
Haven't eaten in 2 weeks and, you know, they're going to take my house. No, I'm just kidding. I'm fucking around, Melissa.
You can't jinx Mary like that.
Bless Mary. Mary's, my hips will give out before hers.
Oh, goodness.
She's a fucking cyborg. She's like a 80-year-old robot. All right, everyone. On that silly note, keep doing your best. Keep being the solution person. Keep having a purpose bigger than yourself. Share the love. I love your guts, and Melissa loves your guts, and we'll talk to you very soon.